This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
I was reading this article last night, Dave, about the nine coaching vacancies, and they ranked them in order, most appealing to least appealing.
Yeah.
It's a little surprising to me. Did you read that through that?
Yeah, I did. And it looks to me like they went off of salary cap space.
Mostly. Yeah. I mean, that's certainly a factor, but don't you have to consider the owner and in certain situations, the GM? And should we work from the bottom up? I know you like to unveil the top. Let's work from the bottom up. Let's do that.
Whatever the most exciting one is, let's go first and just spoil it for the entire segment. That's what I like to do, Bob.
I know you do. You buy a book, you read the last page first,
case,
and then
case
you
I die. Yeah.
Yeah. So no surprise here that at the very bottom of the list, the Houston Texans. And they've got a power-hungry GM that traded away all the talent on the roster. They've got the number three overall pick. And they listen, there was more written there, but basically this is a team that just has very little talent. I don't know what the heck is going to happen with Deshaun Watson. What are they going to continue to pay him just to not be there? Or what's going to happen with him? Is somebody going to trade for him? Still hasn't cleared up his legal situations off the field, so that seems like just a disaster place to be. Is there a redeeming quality to the Texans situation at all right now?
Well, I guess the salary cap, they've got a little bit, and then, you know, high draft choices. But no, I mean, and this is a theme that we'll talk about throughout this discussion, is that it starts at the top, man, the ownership. And McNair has pissed off a lot of good players, guys like Dwayne Brown. You know, Dwayne Brown was just like beside himself down there with some of the things that, you know, that those guys would say. And, you know, look, you've heard the phrase, you know, don't let the inmates run the asylum or whatever. I mean, that's just a stupid thing to say. And McNair said that, if you're the owner, you know, instantly it's you create ill will with your players. So, and you know, for somebody who has, I'm not sure how McNair, I think he sold a power company or something like that, how he got to where, you know, where he is. It's kind of interesting looking at some of these owners, by the way, and how they got there. And just really quick, Tom Benson started off by getting a percentage of a car dealership. And he built it into this, you know, where all of a sudden he was owning, you know, these car dealerships, and then he started buying banks and stuff like that. But for a guy, you know, who's that smart and, you know, and can afford an NFL franchise, McNair, really, there's something missing there, because that to me is, I don't know if that's worse, or, you know, you look at some of the places where the owner kind of has his stamp on it, and it's not good. So yeah, the Texans, I don't disagree that that's probably the worst one.
Yeah, I mean, they've got, according to the story I sent you guys, Houston has nearly $20 million to spend, which puts it in the bottom half of the league. Dealing Watson will accelerate some more dead money onto the cap, but the Texans would ultimately pick up space in 2022, much more in the future, given his base salary this year is $35 million. My goodness.
That's the other thing is, you know, you're also, you have that hanging around your neck as far as Deshaun Watson. What do you do? What do you do with him? I mean, what if, like, nobody wants him, and what if he just goes away, you know? Like, he doesn't play football anymore.
That's a great question. You know, when we were initially hearing stories about him, and they wanted what was the story? Like three firsts and two seconds or something crazy like that. And it's like, yeah, if this is Deshaun Watson free of any legal entanglements, okay, that makes sense. He's one of the bright young stars. He's a phenomenal talent. Makes sense. He's got 20 plus, you know, cases hanging out there in the balance. We don't know if this guy's ever going to pick up a football again, or is he going to settle them all? Is there going to be jail time? I mean, there's so much uncertainty attached to this guy's future. The idea that they could be out there going, yeah, we know all that's going on, but we still need three firsts and 2 seconds and whatever the heck they were asking for. I don't doubt a team would take the chance and bring them in and try to acquire them with the hope, fingers crossed, and do their due diligence. Hey, it looks like we'll settle all these cases, what have you. I don't think they're getting anywhere near that price. I don't know what a team is going to give up for a guy who may or may not ever be available to play, and you know, is making on top of that $35 million.
That to me is as big of a problem as the ownership is Deshaun Watson. And just remember pre all of this what we thought about Deshaun Watson.
Oh yeah, one of the good guys in the league, and you know, yeah, doing stuff for, you know, the less fortunate, helping, you know, the story about helping out the cafeteria workers in their facility, and
yeah,
and by all accounts a stand-up guy. So yeah, it's just a jarring story. It flies in the face of the public perception we had of him. But I don't even know if I blame the Texans so much, because I don't know what the right move is. What should you do? I mean, other than, you know, I don't blame them even for an outrageous asking price. If you can get it, get it. But if you can't, if you were offered something close and you turned it down, then I blame them.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, you deserve to lose. You deserve to be in that situation. If somebody said, no, we're not going to give you three first, we'll give you two and 2 second round or something like that, you should have snapped it up. Then I blame them.
Yeah, maybe somebody got a hold of Deshaun Watson and said, look, this is how you get out of this thing. You just go quiet for a really long time. And then, you know, you come out and say, you know, maybe he ends up serving some time like Michael Vick did. I mean, Michael Vick was killing dogs. I'm sorry to bring it up. And he's been able to get studio jobs. He did time and things like that. So maybe he can get past it. But, yeah, that's the biggest problem. That there is the possibility not only that you don't have a good owner, but your quarterback, who you nailed it. He was a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
And you might absolutely get nothing for – he might just have to not ever play football again.
Number 8 on the list. So no, we're taking a look at the 9 coaching vacancies, and they've been ranked in order on this story that I found last night. Nothing official about it, just this writer's opinion, but we're going through each one. So he had Texans at number 9, bottom of the barrel. Right ahead of them, the New Orleans Saints, which feels weird, doesn't it, to have that team name there? But they are nearly $75 million in the hole heading into the upcoming league year as far as salary cap goes. They obviously don't really have a quarterback. Jameis Winston tore his ACL. He's a stopgap guy. Taysom Hill's a guy they've paid. But he feels like he's more of a slash guy, a complimentary guy. I don't know that he's a franchise guy by any stretch. You had Ian Book, the rookie that started and looked like a rookie, Trevor Siemian. They don't really have an answer at quarterback, the most important spot on the field. Much like the Texans, you got a lot of questions around there, and your salary cap situation is atrocious. Maybe that helps speed up the decision for Sean Payton, because now you know you that's the reason you're looking for a new head coach, and you wonder how much of that went into his decision making.
Yeah. By the way, in the last few years that Jameis Winston has visited Seattle, with Tampa a couple of years ago in 2019, and then this last year, we got 0 interceptions out of him, Bob.
Yeah, the year he threw 30 interceptions, he didn't throw any in Seattle.
None in Seattle. Ugh. So, yeah, but I mean, look, I was watching the Sean Payton thing yesterday, and you can see the love that he had for Tom Benson and the love that he has for, you know, Mrs. Benson. And, you know, he brought her up there and, you know, gave her a hug and everything. So again, I think this is a good owner. This is a good owner with, yeah, a pretty terrible situation. I don't think it exactly offsets, you know, the what was it, $74 million in the hole. It doesn't entirely offset that, but to me, it's like middle of the pack, because you've got, on one hand, you know, you've got an owner that that definitely is wanting to win and going to help you, whereas, you know, you go to a place like the Texans and or Jacksonville, where they're trying to help, but they're not. Just like, your kind of help we don't need.
Yeah.
Okay, just be quiet. Owners own. You know, coaches coach, players play. Just own, and then the end.
And the Saints have talent, you know. Now, how much of it are they going to retain? Are they going to have to? Are there going to be some cap casualties because of their cap situation? You know, is it going to be Lattimore? Is it going to? I mean, they've got Cam Jordan there. They've got Ryan Ramczyk. They've got Kamara. They've got individual talent. You look at it and go, man, I'd love to have that on this roster. I don't know what they do though. I don't know if some of those guys become again, a cap casualty, or maybe they're trying to restructure a bunch of deals to, you know, move money around and push it to years down the road, kick the can down the road, so to speak. I don't know, but they're in a really tough spot, and they don't have a quarterback. So
yeah, well, you mentioned the talent, you know, Kamara, DeMario Davis, I would throw in there too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are some really good players there, enough to offset, I think, you know, the ridiculous burden that you have there in that you know, the salary cap situation.
Okay, so of the nine jobs, the worst, according to the writer, is the Texans, followed by the New Orleans Saints. Coming in at number seven, the Chicago Bears, which I feel like they've been struggling for quite a while. They can't find it.
They have $43 million in salary cap space, though.
Yeah, so they've got some room. They've got some room. You know, they're going to be free of Jimmy Graham. They're going to be free of Akeem Hicks. So they're going to lose some high price guys. They're going to have some money to spend. So, you know, they've got some talent on that team as well. You've got Robert Quinn, who was just ridiculous this year. Yeah. You've got Khalil Mack. You've got their running. What's their running backs? David Montgomery.
Yeah, David
running
Montgomery.
Back. They've got talent. Yeah, I don't know if Fields is going to be the guy or not. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, it was a little rough for him this year, but he's a rookie in this league. A rookie quarterback is that's a tough one to master in year one. You don't often see guys go out there and do that. So I'm going to reserve judgment on him. I don't know if he's the kid or not. We'll find out. But in a more appealing situation, and I was watching again today NFL Live, and they were talking about Dan Quinn being out there for an interview. He's again one of five spots he could probably have if he wants. So we'll see how attractive the Bears become. They got a rich history, and they've got a rabid fan base out there. So it's a good place to land. I think if you have success out there, you're set for life. You'll be a hero in that town forever.
Yeah, I think Chicago is a great football town. I love it. I love the history, everything. But you know, the first thing you got to figure out is we got to get the right quarterback in here. Maybe that's Justin Fields. Maybe it is, but I just, from what we saw, and I think if you look at the performances of those five rookie quarterbacks, obviously Mac Jones being the one that had the most success, I feel like he might be the one, Justin Fields, that has the longest way to go.
Yeah.
Based on how he played. So yeah, that's the setback there. But other than that, like if you're a head coach, I don't know, you've been there, you know it better than anybody, Bob, that, I mean, I don't know how much pressure, I mean, are they ridiculous fans? Like they expect, you know, I guess most NFL fans expect that. Even here in Seattle, fire Pete after one losing season.
There's a lack of patience there as well, certainly. Yeah. You know, I mean, they expect success. They expect their quarterbacks to be great, even though we've gone through the list of their quarterbacks. They've really never had a franchise quarterback, so to speak, since, Sid Luckman. But, yeah, it's a rough go out there if you're not winning, without question. Number six on the list, the Minnesota Vikings, and I love how he started out the breakdown because he addresses the quarterback situation for each team. Quarterback situation for the Vikings. For better or worse, Kirk Cousins, he of the 59-59-2 career record, will be under center in 2022. His $35 million salary already guaranteed.
Wow. You know who he is? He's Derek Carr. He's Derek Carr. I mean, you look at his numbers. Remember the year he had like a 72% completion percentage?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the entire season, Kirk Cousins. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like he always puts up the good numbers, but he can't win. Remember his atrocious – he had for a while there this terrible record against teams above 500. It was like he had like a 200 win percentage or something like that. So – yeah, that's as far as your quarterback goes there. But Ziggy Wolf, I feel like, is a pretty good owner and has done a pretty good job. I don't know. Minneapolis, it's kind of an interesting city.
I mean, they got Dalvin Cook. They got the Justin Jefferson, one of the bright young stars. They got Adam Thielen. They're not devoid of talent.
Right.
I've never been to Minneapolis. I don't know what the city's like, you know, but it's, you know, another city with a rich history when it comes to their football team. You've got some pieces to work with. I'm trying to look at their salary cap. It says salary cap, not pretty. Cousins and Danielle Hunter, who's played seven games over the past two seasons, scheduled to eat up one-third of next season's cap. Vikes next GM will have to reallocate more than $13 million just to be cap compliant.
Yeah, they're 16 in the hole. from what I understand. So, yeah, it's amazing to see all these numbers when you look at what the Seahawks, they were saying they were top eight or whatever as far as salary cap room goes. But, man, I didn't know it was this drastic. And, you know, back to Chicago, and, you know, one of the attractive things about that and some of these other teams, the $43 million that you're under. So that's a great situation. But, yeah, Minnesota a little bit under with minus 16.
Number five on the list, the New York Giants. Another city. If you can win there, you'll be a hero for life. But, you know, you got to wonder about Saquon Barkley. Is he a guy that's going to be healthy? Are they going to invest in him in the future? He's had injury problems. You've got Kenny Galladay. You've got who else?
Daniel Jones, Bob. You forgot to mention.
Yeah, I don't know what I don't know what to think of him. You know,
I
heard a comment from I don't know if it was their owner, somebody in the front office, who's saying basically said we've done everything we could to screw this kid up. Just talking about the revolving door of coordinators and coaches and things like that. They are currently $7 million overspent heading into the new league year, according to this story, for their salary cap. So they've got to make rooms. Make room for you know, bringing in talent if Jones is going to be the guy. And by all accounts, they're sticking with him. Danny Dimes is going to be their guy. But the Giants are number six or number five on this list. So...
And they're a little over the cap, like $3 million. You know, I feel like you look at, like I said, is it a good football town? Yeah, New York can be, absolutely. But and then you look at the ownership, John Mara and Steve Tisch, and then you know, you got to look at the quarterback situation, the GM, you know, the town, the salary cap. But and it looks like this was basically done based on the salary cap. But yeah, you look at. The Giants, it's a good franchise, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I just think I get the feeling that they're going to put more time into Daniel Jones there. And if you're a quarterback guy as a head coach going in there, you're going to want to have a lot of say over what's going on with the quarterback.
Number four on the list, the Denver Broncos, who also have an there seems to be a theme here with most of these teams. They have either salary cap problems and or no answers at the quarterback spot, which is where the Denver Broncos are. Another team that has talent, you know, Patrick Surtain the second looks really good. Javonte Williams, their running back, they've got Jerry Jeudy there, and they also have room in terms of salary cap, according to the story, more than $40 million to play with, is how they put it. So they've got talent on the roster, they've got money to spend. See what they can do about that quarterback situation, though. There's a reason all these teams seem to be in this position looking for new head coaches, because they don't have an answer at quarterback and the money situation is all screwed up.
Yeah, and it's been, I mean, we've gone back. Remember Clayton yesterday was saying before Peyton Manning, it was like seven different quarterbacks, guys like Jake Plummer, and they just haven't been able to get it right for a team that's pretty heavily influenced by John Elway. And I'm curious about that. Like, I haven't heard from John in a couple of years, and I know that he sort of took a back seat. But as far as ownership goes, the Bolin family, pretty solid. I don't know what it's like. Mr. Bolin was around all the time when I was there, and he was one of those guys that got Elway started in the car dealership business. And I remember them saying that he wasn't a good businessman because he didn't want to get in with Elway on that. But I feel like that's a pretty good opportunity there. They got $48 million from what I read in salary cap space.
Well, according to the article I sent you, this person is saying the Fins are expected to have $70 million in free agent funds. So,
are you talking about Miami now?
Oh yeah, I skipped ahead. Sorry, I'm looking at Miami.
Yeah, Miami. No, 75. Yeah, $75 million.
Yeah. So
Steve
the
Ross. Yeah. What do you think about Tua? I mean, that's kind of a weird thing. I feel like maybe he's not the guy everybody thought. It's been kind of interesting with Tua Tagovailoa. Did I say that right? Did Bob go dark on us again? Is he out? Or is it me, Lefko?
Yeah. Might be. No, Bob?
Yeah.
No. Okay. You really threw him for a loop with the Dolphins thing.
Yeah. Steven Ross is the owner down there, and you know, I think decent owner, but it just seems like they had the weird thing going on with the coach this year. Brian Flores didn't work out, and so Yeah, it was. You know, they've got some. They got the more cap space than anybody in the NFL. Next on the list is the Raiders.
Well, let me ask you a question about this, though. Do you agree that these are desirable because of cap space?
No.
Or are there certain situations? I don't agree that just because of cap space, the situations make them desirable.
No, I've been saying the entire time that it's about ownership. It's about the quarterback. What kind of town it is, the franchise, you know, is it a good, solid franchise that's been run well for a long time? So, and that's why our next one is kind of interesting, who they have ranked is the Raiders. And they made the playoffs, but they play in the AFC West, which you got Derek Carr in the final year of his contract. They got $29 million in cap space, but you know, I'm looking at ownership, Mike, and, you know, Mark Davis, we like to make fun of his stupid haircut, but I feel like, you know, because of his dad, he's very dedicated to making that right. They got that beautiful building there. Vegas, I mean, they certainly had some tough times as far as, you know, this year and what they overcame. But a team that made it to the playoffs and, you know, I feel like they overcame a lot of adversity, and I know we got to get to break.
We got a second here. I was going to say, well, how much do you also put in the matter of what division they're in? Because if I'm a head coach and I'm looking at like the Giants, okay, there's a lot of pressure there, but they play in a bad division compared to the Raiders or the Broncos. I don't want any part of Justin Herbert or Patrick Mahomes for the next 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got such young guys. Exactly. So, you know, the Broncos don't have a quarterback. Carr, we'll see, you know, what's going to go on there. But, yeah, those two guys. By the way, welcome to the NFC West as well. AFC West, NFC West. I mean, three teams make the Super Bowl. The playoffs. And then you've got franchise quarterback, and, well, we'll see about Arizona. But, and then lastly, and this is the one I think is the worst. It would be the one ranked, well, no, I think the Texans is the least desirable. But with $72 million in cap space, that's not enough to get me to go down and coach under the owner, Shad Khan.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, his son, I think his son is the CEO. He got in a Twitter battle with Yannick Ngakoue a couple of years ago before he left there. I mean, you got to be kidding me. And so, you know, you look at, you know, they're talking about possibly playing half their games in London at one point. And, you know, as far as that organization and, you know, their fan base and everything down there, it's just a really bad situation. I get the $72 million. You're going to have a high draft choices for a while. You know, maybe that would be the challenge, but I think it's going to be tough for if Byron Leftwich gets that job down there. And you got your quarterback, right?
Yep.
You got your quarterback of the future, whether you like it or not. You're going to be stuck with him for at least another couple of years if he doesn't make it. But, yeah, this is, to me, the least desirable Jacksonville.
Yeah. Well, Dave, we'll find Bob. So let's throw it
we'll
to break
Bob.
Here. So I'm gonna throw it to break here. We'll find Bob. We'll reconnect. If you guys have more grades to give, we're going to grade the tight ends and the safeties, and then we'll talk about this some more. But, Dave, we'll get Bob back for you. This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
I don't know what's going on here, Dave.
Well, the texters do. The texters know.
What do they say?
Uh-oh, somebody forgot to pay the Comcast bill.
I am diligent about paying my bills. I don't know what we haven't had this problem at all. So I have no idea what's happening today, but I did what every technician you get on the phone tells you to do. I turned everything off and I turned it back on. So we'll see if that worked. Well, we'll see. I actually unplugged the power from the modem, the router, and then let it sit for 15 seconds, plugged it back in. So outside of that, that's where my technical expertise ends, Dave.
That's what I told Clayton, and that's when he he said, yeah, that's what the AT&T goons told me.
Yeah.
He called them goons. I was like, John, did you try unplugging it and plugging it back in again or changing your password just something stupid just to annoy him? And it did.
We're going to ask him today again who he voted for in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, we'd have to find a sneaky way. Text it in, by the way. This is a great use for the text toy, 206-421-3776. How should we phrase a question to Clayton? about who he voted for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we got to think of a sneaky way to get him to divulge who he voted for. And then we can ask him about uniform combinations. We can ask him about firing Pete Carroll, trading Russell Wilson.
Make-believe.
Urban Meyer we can bring up.
Urban Meyer. Hey, yeah. That thing you sent me with Dan Dakic.
Yeah.
Dakic, did you watch that?
I didn't watch it. I just read the transcript.
I have to say, man, watching that, Urban Meyer came off as very impressive.
Really?
Yes. And, you know, he knows the game and, you know, just the way he was, you know, talking. I've always kind of looked at him as kind of a jerk, but Dakic mm-hmm. and him are really good friends. So, it was a good interview. I was captivated by it. It was like 40 minutes or something.
Wow. All right. Well, maybe we'll ask Clayton about that. meanwhile, we continue giving out grades, looking at each position group for the Seahawks team and taking a look at the past season in totality. How did each group do? And now we get to the tight ends, which they were more present. If you look at the number of combined targets and catches, it exceeded last year. But we all looked at last year as almost a cautionary tale. Like, well, you can't do this again. They got to be more involved in this. And they were marginally. Gerald Everett was third on the team in total targets and receiving yards. Four touchdowns, did have two fumbles. Will Dissly, 21 catches. He had 26 targets all season long. 231 yards and one touchdown. He wasn't a factor. I don't know what it is. Maybe they just love him as a blocker.
He's a good blocker. That is mystifying to me. 15 games he played in. Yeah, 26. So less than two targets per game, if my math is correct, Bob.
Yes.
But, yeah, just an 11-yard average when he does catch the ball. He had a touchdown. But, I mean, he just looks so good those first 2 years. And, you know, he got hurt, and they didn't really target him last year either.
I don't get it. I thought with Waldron coming in, the way they worked with Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett, that, okay, the tight ends will be a prominent part of what they do. And again, to their credit, Everett was a fairly big part of the passing game. He did have 48 catches. I mean, it's not a huge year, 48 catches, but it was bigger than what we'd seen the tight ends have in previous seasons. So I don't know. I feel like we're in the same spot. I'm giving the same grades. I'd kind of give them a C. I just think it was average at best, maybe even a C minus, and not so much on them, their play, but they just weren't present enough. I mean, I guess if we're basing it on what they did while they were being used, all right, then I'd give them a B minus. But just overall impact on the team, C.
Yeah, I'm giving them a B plus, Bob. I loved what Gerald Everett, and that's the boost that kind of puts it over the top. Now, yeah, the two fumbles, I mean, the disastrous game he had against the Niners, which they were able to win. But, you know, just him and getting the ball in the flat and breaking tackles. And man, he got smoked by Jalen Thompson on one of those where he broke a tackle, and that safety from Arizona, from Wazoo, that guy will hit you. I love that kid. And he just got right up afterwards. I mean, this is a tough guy. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fact that it was a surprise to me, you know, and maybe. But Dissly, yeah, I feel like it's not at all his fault. You know, and like 26, I mean, we're talking about Doug Baldwin as far as catch percentage goes. So, yeah throw him the ball. I this is probably where I'm being a little bit too gracious, but B-plus for the tight ends.
Well, as far as safeties go, let's start with the elephant in the room, Jamal Adams, which people seem to really get a kick out of disliking or talking about what a terrible player he is, terrible deal it was. He got hurt 12 games this year, 87 tackles. He had four tackles for a loss. He had five passes defended, two interceptions, which was two more than he had the previous year, but he didn't have any sacks this year, whereas he had 9.5 last year. So,
yeah.
And we you and I harped on it all year about how they were using him. And so I don't put all of that on Jamal. I think, you know, they put him in a position really not to have a tremendous impact the way they were using him. You know, it was really, really in stark contrast to the way he was used the year before. So that's his season. Quandre Diggs, by all measure, the best player on defense all season long. Yep. He's getting that recognition outside of Seattle as well. He had 94 tackles, 5 interceptions, 7 passes defended. Just another great year. Obviously a brutal injury, and sounds like he'll be fine from that, but not the way you wanted his season to end. And then Ryan Neal, he's one of those guys that's a free agent that I think we all like, but you know, he's not a star, but I think he's a solid player. He had 2 tackles for a loss, 3 passes defended, 49 yeah. tackles.
He's Rasheem Green. You know what I mean? He's a really good player.
Piece.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I feel like this is probably the best group. And it's kind of funny because, like, you look at Bobby's stats, which everybody looks at, and I feel like it didn't really tell the story, you know. But watching Jamal Adams, I felt kind of down, like he had a down year. But really, when you look at his stats, it's the other way. I mean, these are 87 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 5 passes deflected, and 2 interceptions. Now, I know, I'd like to say this, one of those passes deflected went off his face. He used his face to break it up, but it wasn't, once again, this is kind of a theme. We're talking about tight ends. We're talking about linebackers, D-line, and safeties just didn't play them the way that they're, you know, that suits them the best. I mean, those are not mm-hmm. bad numbers for Jamal Adams, but you did see a couple times he got beat in coverage. You know, I remember the flag route or corner route that Tyler Higbee ran, I think it was, that beat him. A couple of times we saw him get beat in pass coverage, but I don't know, put him in better situations. You know, I was kind of having a little debate with somebody on the text toy about Bobby and the scheme. And, yeah, I mean, maybe it is the scheme, but when you look at, like, what they need from linebackers, you've got to be a downhill player. And, you know, for as far as Jamal goes, I feel like, yeah, that was, you know, just he wasn't he was asked to do things that he typically is not great at. So, yeah, put him in a better position. What'd you give him, Bob?
I'm going to give the safeties a B-. I mean, I think they played collectively pretty. I mean, Quandre played great. Jamal was incomplete. You know, he didn't have the impact. And again, as we just went through, not all his fault. It was more about how they were using him. Ryan Neal, solid player. So I'll go B-. What did you give him?
I'm going to give him a B+, just like the tight ends. So, yeah. And Quandre, you give an A.
As an individual? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, it's a question that might have changed the entire course of this Seahawks offseason. It's What If Wednesday. We'll ask that question next. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
We do it every week. Every Wednesday, we play the hypothetical, ask the question, what if? What if? Little hypothetical before John Clayton, who really doesn't like hypotheticals. He'll join us at the top of the hour. Stay tuned for that. But today's What If Wednesday, again presented by Pendergast Law Personal Injury Lawyers. What if the Seahawks hadn't signed Jamal Adams to an extension, Dave?
Wow. That would be pretty crazy, because what would you gave up 2 draft choices for him.
Yes.
I think that would be seen as maybe one of the biggest swings and misses ever. I mean, you got a ton out of him, but I mean, look, he had a really good 2020, but was that worth 2 first round draft choices?
No, you got knocked out early in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It didn't work at all in terms of that. If it was a 1 year, we're going for it, we're making this move. You didn't get that would have to be a Super Bowl move, giving up multiple first round picks.
Right.
So yeah, you knew they were signing. When you give up that kind of draft capital and you know he's coming up on a contract, it was obvious they were going to re-sign him, unless he just came out here and face planted that season and just was a horrible fit, just didn't work at all. Then okay, maybe. But yeah, it would have been considered a failure if they didn't re-sign him after a season like that.
Yeah, and look, again, I just can't say enough about. I think people are going to be really surprised next year when at least the ones that are the doubters of Jamal Adams, because again, going out and watching him at practice, Bob, like, I've never seen a player stand out in practice like him. And I know it's practice, but still, it just speaks to who he is, how fast he plays, how much energy he has, how much there was lots of times that he got kind of screwed because of somebody not doing their job. And, you know, he never, as far as a leader, he never points fingers or yells at guys on the field or anything like that. And then, you know, there were sometimes there were guys that were playing half speed and he was playing full speed. He's a great example of, you know, what I was talking about, how if you just have everybody going as hard as they can on every single play. This is what I used to say to my high school guys. I would always say, it's an emergency. Like, you have to get there. Like, if this was, you know, you were running for your life. You know, you're running from a bear in the woods, or, and if it was me, I'd just turn around and whoop his ass. But, but yeah, I mean, that's what it's about. And that's what you see from him. You saw it at practice, and then you saw it absolutely play out in the games. I mean, that very first game that he had against Atlanta, where he, I don't know, I think he got a sack in that game, but he also had a bunch of plays on the perimeter where he either blew up a fly sweep or a toss or a screen. I mean, he's just all over the place. So, I mean, I can't wait till next year, but we had so many people texting in that, oh, he was a waste of money. Look at him. He you know, got it paid and then he, you know, shut it down and this and that. Remember when we interviewed him, Bob? That was like,
oh yeah.
Like he talks and expresses himself like he plays, like he is just all in on everything. And the other thing too is like his mom telling him, hey, you know what, you've proved your point, that's good enough, just, you know, sign. Yeah. I mean, I know they wanted, like,
he said he wasn't boo-boo the fool.
Yeah. And he wanted like $20 million or something was what he was asking. So yeah, I feel like this guy is a football player. He really cares about playing football.
Let me reframe this for you, though, guys. What if they wouldn't have re-signed him to an extension and tried to sign him after this season? Kind of like they did with Carlos Dunlap. They let him go. They brought him back. Would it have been cheaper because he didn't have a good year? Or do you think he still would command such a high price that the same thing would have happened?
So what would you have paid him for this year?
Well, no, you let him go. You let him go after this year, right? He is a free agent now after the season had ended if they hadn't re-signed him. So you're in the position just like, could you have maybe re-signed Quandre Diggs? Could you have re-signed someone else instead of the money they sent on Jamal Adams?
I don't think the money they spent on Jamal prohibited them from making other deals. They had excess money. They had money left over that's going to carry over into next year. So they weren't a team that was, hey, man, we only got $1 million left. We only got $2 million. No, they had money. I don't why they didn't re-sign Quandre, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Maybe they just didn't. I don't know. I don't know the reason behind that. But that's the other part of this, is people look at the team struggling and saying, well, they spent all that money on Jamal. No matter. No wonder. I'm like, well, who didn't they go get that they wanted to because they spent money on Jamal? They had what was it, $11 million left there? And we know, you know, you talked about the team having $13 million, and all of a sudden the Bucks were able to re-sign everybody. There are way, even when the dollar amount looks like it's not that significant, the way they're able to push things and repurpose it and call it a bonus as opposed to this, as opposed to that, they have ways of bringing in who they need to bring in, especially when they've got excess cap room that they did not use this year.
Well, and also I'd have to go back and look, but his contract was up. Right? I mean, he played the first 4 years, and so...
I think there was a... Because he was a first-round pick, I think there was a fifth year.
Was it? Oh, okay, there was a
fifth year. It was running out after this current season.
Yeah, I still think that was absolutely the right move. It didn't work that way, and I'm very curious to see what happens with a different defensive coordinator in here. But, you know, a good coach would come in, and even if you're the owner, you're probably, if you're Jody Allen, saying, look, how do we get the most out of Dunlap? How do we get the most out of you know, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, you know, and especially Jamal Adams? He's the biggest question mark, just because, you know, he's a defensive back, but you kind of want to play him like a linebacker. And you know what, he's a big dude. I watching him play, he plays like a smaller guy that's quicker, but he's 6'1". you know, and 215 or so. I mean, he can play down in the box. You know, linebackers.
And he has. And I'd love to see them sort of mimic what they did initially with him, which was very similar to the way the Cardinals used Buda Baker.
Yeah.
And he's very non-traditional. It's not like they just leave him out there and he's the back, he's the safety, he's only covering that part of the field. No, they've got him up on the line. They move him all over the place on the line. And what do you see? You see an impact player.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. If you look at Buda Baker's numbers, and you know he's got like 6 tackles for loss. I know he has a sack. He had interception, 3 interceptions. He's just all over the field. That's exactly how you want to play Jamal Adams, and I think Jamal Adams is better.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. All right, we got the professor coming up. If you guys have questions for John, text him in right now, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. He's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.